got a Black Hawk down. We got a Black Hawk down.
Can you spell it?
D-J-A-N-G-O. The D is silent.
I'm gonna need you to go ahead and come in tomorrow.
Statistical facts. Cops will never pull over a man with a huge bong in his car. Why? They fear this man. They know he sees farther than they. Will bind them with ancient logic.
Oh, you're trying to remember your training now? What's the regulation to cover this? Well, first time for everything. Yes.
What makes you think this is my first time?
Oh, Mr. Bob.
Okay, dear listener, we sure hope you did not wreck your car chair dancing. As you heard our intro music, we are the Good Trash Genre Cast, and we are so glad to be with you again talking about trash movies that are not the high art, but rather the good trash that needs to be appreciated, a la Pauline Kael. We used to be a Film Society podcast, but now we're just kind of doing our own thing. We need to introduce ourselves. To my left, this dapper gentleman.
My name is Dalton Stewart, and just because I feel like this is a good week to remind you, remember that Detective McNulty's good police.
And to my right, sir.
I am Arthur Gordon.
And my name is Dustin Sells. Dear listener, we are so glad to be here with you, and we're so glad to be seeing so many of you visiting our website at podbean.com.
Oh, guys, I want to let you know, listeners, just in case you doubted that you were appreciated, we all about crapped ourselves this week when we saw how many of you have been listening lately. That really made us feel really good.
It's over 9,000!
The chair dance you were doing just now as you were listening to our intro music, I did with no music whatsoever when I found this out. That's how happy we were. So we are so glad again to be doing this. We're going to be talking about a movie called End of Watch. And
go ahead. Sorry. We're fine.
I feel like that scene in Wolf of Wall Street just now. We're going to talk about End of Watch. We're going to do some analysis because this is not a review show. We're not going to tell you about whether or not we like the movie or not. Well, we are, but that's not what this show's about. It's about what's inside the movie when we break it open and we look at it and we talk about what it means and what's going on with it. But before we do that, we will do a quick review. And then after that, spoilers ahoy. But in case you haven't seen it and you just don't care to be spoiled, we're going to go ahead and give you a synopsis now from the voice of the cinema. Mr. Arthur Gordon, if you would, sir.
Shot documentary style. This film follows the daily grind of two young police officers in L.A. who are partners and friends, and what happens when they meet criminal forces greater than themselves.
Outstanding. It's Cops, L.A. And we're going to begin to my left with our thumbs up, thumbs down, quick reviews, just what works or doesn't work, with Mr. Dalton Stewart. If you'd go, sir.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I liked it. Yeah, and I really do want to address what I think is my biggest issue with this film right up top, and the synopsis, I think, pretty clearly and definitively addresses it, is that it's showed, quote, documentary style for about 5 minutes. And then it just kind of does whatever the shit it wants. And that bothers me. And here's why. I think for a found footage film to be effective, you have to obey by the rules. I think there are a certain set of rules you need to obey for it to make sense within the context of the film. Did somebody edit this together and then present it to us, like in Paranormal Activity? You know, did someone find what was left, or the Blair Witch Project? Did someone find this, cut out the boring parts, and is showing it to the world so they can see what happened? In films like, I'm trying to think of some other examples. Chronicle, I guess, is one example. Are we seeing, you know, a compilation of sorts? You know,
Cloverfield,
yeah. Are we seeing Cloverfield? We're seeing. So this is just what happened,
yeah. Right?
You know, nobody cut this together. At End of Watch, we have what is, I can only describe as, a really well-produced film that just happens to be shot with handhelds a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I think you can shoot a film with a lot and use handhelds a lot and use unique camera views without actually having to explain it to me. Mm-hmm. I think this film loses some of its impact by being like, oh, I'm shooting this for my film class as my art elective. I had an art class by the art elective class that seems to go on for about 3 years, by the way. And that's my biggest issue.
They just got married real quick.
Well, and then she got pregnant. And then his partner had a baby. Like, they all go through a lot of life changes in this time.
Right. And then the aliens came.
Exactly.
In the end.
Yeah.
But we're not spoiling yet.
No. Here's my problem, guys. Don't address the rules if you're going to break the rules. Don't even bother. What's the point? Now, that, to me, is a bit nitpicky. I just want to get it out of the way. Because, for the most part, I think it is effective. They do, hey, here's where we got cameras. You do see other cameras from time. You see several cameras on their dash, and they don't make an effort to hide them. I think that's interesting. I guess my only complaint is there are times where we are seeing things from a camera that there's just a camera there. And it's like, okay, why are we doing... Why did you bother? Why did you bother if you were just going to shoot it like any old movie? I mean, I get the attempt to bring it to the street level and to really get some of that grit on it. And I think that is effective in terms of a look conveying a certain feel and a certain tone, I think, is effective. But in terms of being a quote-unquote found footage, quote-unquote documentary-style film, it's a failure. That being said, I think it's a great cop movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think it really works, and I think why it works is it has stakes. This is a film with real emotional stakes that actually takes time to let you hang out with the characters. I think this film is most effective when it's a day in the life of a patrol of a B-cop.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's least effective when it's trying to do something else at the end. When the plot actually kicks into gear in the third act. Although... because we've spent so much time with these characters, that does still work to some extent. Because
you still care.
Because you still care.
Right.
Is the plot, okay, it kind of goes, well, this doesn't make really any sense at all, but I care about these characters, so I'm in for the ride. So I think overall it is an effective and engaging cop thriller. And, I like cop movies. What do you want? I like gangster movies, I like cop movies. Yeah, I got a wheelhouse.
Absolutely. It's definitely in those places. Mr. Arthur Gordon, what do you think?
I was going to piggyback off Dalton for a second. One of the things I...
Feel free.
So much, so far as, the multiple cameras, didn't really bother me with Gyllenhaal. You know, they have the chess cameras and he's got his dash camera. Mm-hmm. What really kind of struck me odd, though, is apparently every other gang in town is documenting what's happening.
Yeah, yeah.
And that is odd to me. And it's so often, that's when it gets distracting, is when it begins breaking the diegesis of the in-film film.
Yeah. Exactly. And so it's like who compiled all this footage?
Yeah.
Where are all these extra cameras coming
What's
from?
What's the point? Why are they documenting it if it's not?
How much money did Taylor spend on this stupid film project for his art class?
Are there plans in the gangs to get both sides of the story?
That's ridiculous.
But
is that effective for the emotional story? I think absolutely. Yeah. Is it effective for the rules of the story? Not really. Yeah. This isn't Vietnam. There are rules.
Yeah.
Right.
But you know what? Overall, I love this movie.
Oh, you love it.
I love it. Okay. I want to marry it. And I want to have end of watch babies with it.
Keep going.
For the third act of this film, I was really on the edge of my seat.
For sure.
And it's a movie that's kind of drew me out, and that doesn't always happen with these kind of action thrillers. But you know what? I think it's good. I think it's fun. Well, not fun, but you know what I mean.
It's fun.
But I think what I really like to read this movie as is this is the prequel to Prisoners.
Oh, man. Yeah. I'm in.
Which we see Jake Gyllenhaal several years older. Bitter and grizzled in small town Philadelphia or wherever they are, Pennsylvania or whatever it is. But, this is a two thumbs up kind of movie for me, so I really liked it.
Excellent. I really liked the movie as well. I think I liked it a little bit more than Dalton did. And I guess I give the movie a different sort of pass.
No. I want to be clear. I did really like this movie. That thing just bothered me immensely.
Sure.
Yeah.
The movie, to me, seems like it's a movie in which it does not pretend not to be a movie, but within the movie, the characters are doing some filming.
Mm-hmm.
And there are other aspects of it where we are seeing the larger... cinematic product. And that is the way I took it. There are going to be lots and lots of bits where we are listening to sundry bits of conversation in a very, very private kind of way. But then there's going to be like a love scene, which clearly no one's holding the camera during that one.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
But it's being shot in a way that's kind of the cinema verite style. Dogma 95 kind
of
style.
So you're saying the pass is, even though when it's not expressly part of his movie, it's still shot like that.
It kind of continues on with the style of the general overall film that's being made, which is incorporating things that are being shot by characters within that film. So that's, I mean, again, I don't know, I don't really think about that so much.
It doesn't work for me, but I buy that.
I see it when it happens. I mean, clearly he does not have a shotgun-mounted camera in the last
scene. Is that badass? For sure.
But yeah, and I like that. And the Doom reference is not lost upon me. And that's good times anyway. So I like the movie a lot. The performances are really what make this movie. This is a character drama. I mean, more than anything, the two leads, are just really, really solid. Anna Kendrick is great. I really, really like the movie a lot.
Oh, for sure.
So it's a lot of
Michael Pena and Gyllenhaal just really, the chemistry between the two of them makes this film.
Yeah, I totally believe in that friendship.
Absolutely.
And that's a good thing. So I like it. I recommend it highly. It's a good movie. So let's move on now and do what we do, which is do analysis. Let's talk about what this means. Let's break it open and do some examination.
Hello? Hello? Anybody home? Hey, think with fly thing.
I begin with you, Mr. Arthur Gordon. What say you, sir?
What I really like about this film, I don't have a lot, but it's that in that documentary style and in that cinema verite style you're talking about, it's this idea, you know, the day in the life that Dalton mentioned. I like this, that this isn't another a cop procedural mystery, two homicide detectives trying to figure something out. It's two kind of bottom of the ladder kind of average Joe cops just out there, and they kind of stumble onto something that's bigger than them. And I like how they present that. And what I like about this, as I did research, you know, Gyllenhaal and Pena spent about 5 months, I think, doing ride-alongs with the LAPD.
Holy crap. Really? Wow.
Gyllenhaal saw somebody murdered on his first day doing ride-alongs.
Wow.
And a lot of the scenes between the two of them are actually improv.
I got that feeling, yeah.
And so I like a lot of what they're doing here, and I think it brings this kind of realistic element
to it. It doesn't just feel like, this is the story you're going to tell, now just tell it.
Yeah.
Right.
I think there adds kind of a more organic sort of, you know, explosive kind of element to it to allow it to kind of grow and evolve throughout instead of just going by the script or whatever. And so I think for that it should be kind of praised. I just like the way it's presented on the whole, I think, so.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Mr. Arthur Gordon. Mr. Dalton Stewart, what analysis bring you, sir?
I got quite a bit this week, actually.
Do you?
So here's what we're talking about. And I know I talked about this a lot on the show. I talked about gender quite a bit.
Right.
It's a subject that interests me. And I think here, there are other things interesting here going on. Other things of interest going on here, I should say. Gyllenhaal addresses in the opening lines of the film the objectivity of the law. The idea that the law is blind, and yet in practice, not often is it.
No.
Also, we get a very 21st century phenomenon of people having the need to document their lives, and there's a little bit of that going on. But what I thought about here was dueling ways of expressing masculinity. I got to give a shout out to a professor I had back at UCO, Dr. Amanda Miller, late of UCO now. I believe she's at the University of Indianapolis. She didn't die. I said late. I typically mean somebody died, sorry. I mean, Dr. Miller's doing fine as far as I'm aware. Although I haven't heard of her since she left UCO, so I don't know. Maybe she's dead. I don't know.
Well, I want a University of Indianapolis shout out.
Props. My point is, I got to give her props because of her class that I took at UCO. Related to what I referenced at the beginning of the show, and that is Men, Masculinity, and The Wire.
Mm.
The HBO series The Wire, obviously. Sure. And in this class, the point she kind of drove at, and something I wrote a lot about in this class, is the idea that offender masculinities, gangster masculinities, if you will, and cop masculinities are so tightly intertwined that there comes a point where you almost can't even distinguish the difference between the two of them. And I think that's really something we see at play here in End of Watch, is the expression of masculinity that you see on the force and in the gang. And this is not limited to men. This extends to the women on the force and the women in these gangs as well. It is about power.
Mm-hmm.
It is about dominance. It is about doing violence, which we talk about on the show frequently, I know. It is about no fear, and it is about no feeling.
Right.
Who is the least, when the rookie Boots gets, you know, her face smashed in, who are the least sympathetic? The female cops.
The two female cops.
Because they have the least, you know, they are least, they have the least amount of leeway to express emotion because they have to prove, they have something to prove. And
we have souls, we just leave them at home.
Exactly.
Right.
And you hear, you know, writings of female cops in the real world, you do hear a little bit about this, of they have to be the baddest asses out there to prove that they belong. And I think that's really something you're seeing at play here of Into Watch. David Ayer, obviously, he's a big fan of cops, I think, mm-hmm. and showing what they struggle with and, you know, what it's like to be a cop.
I was once employed in Little Rock, Arkansas, and in my job I gave a lot of counsel to police officers, and absolutely what you're saying there is completely
yeah.
the case.
There is no room
mm-hmm.
to show a lack of masculinity.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is true in the hierarchy of the gang world. The only difference is someone will shoot you in the face.
Right.
You know, you just, you know, won't get promoted if you're a cop. And I think that's something we're seeing here play in the Watch, and something I've always found interesting, and again, props to Dr. Miller, something that she taught on very well when discussing HBO's The Wire, is this idea that these two sets of individuals locked in a seemingly endless war around drugs really aren't that different from one another in certain regards. Obviously, some are want to protect people, and others don't really are, you know, about making that bling the bling.
Right.
But at the end of the day, there is a certain amount of camaraderie, I guess you could say. There is a certain amount of understanding for one another. You see this when Michael Pena's character, Z, I forget his actual name, and the banger that he gets in the fight at the beginning of the movie. They both reference each other. You see, they get in a fight at the beginning of the film, and throughout the film, it keeps getting referenced. And there is a certain amount of respect between the two of them.
Mm-hmm. Right,
and I think that's
they squabble. They do squabble,
As it said. They throw down
mad squabbles.
Mad squabbles. Pull off his he was a homie about it.
That's right.
He took off his badge.
He was G about it.
Thank you. And I think that really is the clearest example of what I'm talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
Is that there is this certain amount of respect because what they're doing, both groups are engaged in something that's very dangerous,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's very interesting. If you want some more reading on offender masculinity...
Yes, please.
Okay, give me a second.
Oh, man, yeah.
There is a really, really, really great book called Prison Masculinities. It's a collection of articles by inmates, by sociologists, basically talking about masculinity in prison. And that's a really great place to go if you're interested in learning about expressions of masculinity for offenders, for mm-hmm. people who break the law. That's a book, again, called Prison Masculinities. It's edited by Don Sabo, I believe is how you pronounce his name, Terry A. Coopers, and Willie London. Secondly, if you're interested in the hood and how the hood operates when the police aren't there or how it operates in conjunction with the police,
mm-hmm.
There is a book called Off the Books, The Underground Economy of the Urban Poor by a Mr. Venkatesh, whose name I could never pronounce when I had to talk about him in class. But it's a really interesting book, basically about how the hood works
mm-hmm.
and how police are integrated in that society. Because, you know, ghetto cops understand that they can't arrest everybody doing something illegal.
Right.
Otherwise, they'll never get anything done.
Like the party scene, just put that stuff out.
Hey, put that dope up.
Yeah.
Or the fight at the very beginning of the
mm-hmm.
film.
I'm not here to get you about
that. I'm not here to arrest you, but I'm going to kick the shit out of you to prove a point.
Right.
I have to prove a point to be able to rely on you to give me information I might need later on. So those are two interesting books you go to. Those were books, again, shout out to Dr. Miller, that were required reading for our class over the wire. So highly recommend those. That's all I got to say today.
All right.
Dustin, what do you want to talk about?
Well, I want to talk about I want to do some analytical complexity with the film.
Lay it on me, brother.
And I want to talk about how this is a good film, how this is good trash that could have been great, that could have maybe even raised the level of art film, but did not do so. And that's because, in the end, it is a movie about an office of power, which is the police. It is a movie about a circumstance in which these powerful agents do not ever abuse their power. There is not a bad cop in
this.
Even the one really, really angry cop is just because bureaucracy gets in the way.
A bitter
kind of cop. Mark Furman, who's just really upset that he got the... I mean, I don't really know. But see, Mark Furman and those bits of conversation are not where being injected into this film. And David Ayer can do better.
He's done better.
He's done Training Day, in which we have good cops bad cops,
in between cops,
and there's quite a lot more complexity there. And frankly, as I looked at the films back to back, because I did that after I realized it was the same dude. Is that many of the shots are duplicated. These rear bumper shots are duplicated by front bumper shots in rear bumper shots in End of Watch by front bumper shots on the amazing car of Denzel Washington.
Oh, yeah. Alonzo Harris got a sick whip.
that Monte Carlo is pretty cool.
Oh, my God. I love that car.
It's on the front end of that. There's a whole lot of kind of imitative places where Antoine Fuqua, who directed the first film, does some similar things. David Ayers actually directs his own screenplay with the second film.
That's correct.
And it seems to me that Ayers should have held on to one script rather than the other and let End of Watch be farmed out to someone else.
And he should have held on for Training Day.
Instead
of using that to be the film he cut his teeth on to get his foot in the door.
Absolutely.
He should have let that be his masterpiece and hold on to it.
No doubt. And I got to say, he writes characters very well. He writes dialogue.
He writes great dialogue.
Really, really well.
Harsh Times with Christian Bale was his directorial debut. One of his first, like, big-time releases, though, in several theaters was Street Kings, starring Keanu Reeves, which is not a good movie, but it still has really good cop dialogue.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, yeah, he's really, really solid writer. But what he's done here with this particular film is he has created really, in a sense, although very nice guys that we would like and care about, he has created a one-dimensional police force. And he has this opportunity, I think, to insert these characters into something greater. And the movie's only an hour and 45 minutes long. It could have stood to have been another 45 minutes longer, where we could have extended that Hauser story. We could have dealt with these issues of corruption. We could have had opportunities where perhaps they chose poorly, where they chose well. And that complexity lacks in this particular film. And really what I found myself wishing for as I watched this was an even greater film, actually high art. Martin Scorsese's The Departed, in which you have exactly what I'm talking about, where you have good bad guys, bad good guys, good guys, and bad bad guys. And you have this, and people,
you got the whole spectrum
strange,
of lawful good to chaotic evil.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's very, very, very complicated, and it's deep, and it's real in that sense. And you know, the film tricks, the use of the found footage and all that stuff, I think it elevates it a little higher than it probably would have been otherwise. It probably would have been a pretty, I mean, I wouldn't say pedestrian, because again, the dialogue is lightning.
Yeah, and the character chemistry, the actor chemistry, and
the performances are very, very solid. But I think part of what makes this thing so great is it's got this gimmick going with it. And because in the end, the story itself is a little flat.
It is.
They're both always nice. They're wives.
Yeah.
They're just, you know, they're not.
They're good guys.
Absolutely.
There aren't any complicated characters.
And the fact
the bad
that
bad guys are bad guys and the good guys are good guys.
And I know some really, really good guys.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sitting with a couple of them, but they're not always super good guys.
I've had my moments.
We all have those.
Yeah.
And that is what the movie lacks.
I think that's fair. And I think that might be why I keyed in on The Wire and my thinking about what do I want to talk about this film is because it is something that's so much better than this. But this would have been a really cool subplot in The Wire, is these two beat cops.
Yeah, and what I would say about this then in an analysis is that cinema is an opportunity to engage with society. And in this particular case, it fails. All we got is bad drug dealers and good cops trying to do their job.
Yeah.
Occasionally the bureaucracy gets in the way of good cops doing the right thing, and it ain't that. There's a whole lot more.
The world
more.
Is far much more complex than that.
And I really feel like there was an opportunity taken here, again, because there is so much chemistry, there is so much emotional connection and vicarious experience in this film, that if that had been taken hold of, this really could have been something amazing. I mean, something truly, truly powerful. And in the end, it was just something moving and fun and, you know, time well spent, don't get me wrong, but it could have been much more. Well, all right, let's do what we do, guys. Let's talk about Shelf or Trash, Else, or Instead. Mr. Dalton Stewart, if you would, sir.
I'm going to put this on the shelf.
I
like cop movies, man. What do you want? It's good. It's fun. It's good fun.
yes.
Boom. That's all I got. What do you want?
Else or Instead?
Yeah. Shut up. I'll get there. I'm watching this movie about the hood. I'm feeling defensive right now. I got to represent. Come me, best come correct, listener. Elser, instead, obviously, you should also watch Training Day, as Dustin did.
Yes.
It's a great film. Mm-hmm. It's a film I love. It's probably one of my favorite films of the last 20 years. Yeah, I like it that from 93 to 2003, I like it that much. It's definitely in the top 10 of those two decades, probably.
Yeah.
I love that movie.
It's a good movie.
That's a movie I saw way too early, but totally rocked my world and let me know what movies could look like. Also, a film from that same year that does something interesting with found footage, Chronicle. Check it out. Here we're seeing the cop movie played with in found footage. There we see the superhero origin story played with in found footage. I think both of them cheat a little too much. Chronicle less than End of Watch, though. Both good movies. Check them out.
Excellent. Mr. Arthur Gordon, shelf or trash? Else or instead?
This one's probably going to be going on the shelf. I really enjoyed it a lot. And just kind of back up Dalton. I'm going to say Training Day and Chronicle is a good pick as well.
Oh, those both are your else's?
No, Training Day was. Training Day wasn't there. But the other one I'm going to mention, this is the second Jake Gyllenhaal film we've reviewed in about 2 months. And we also saw him, I know Dalton saw him in Prisoners. I don't know if Dustin saw Prisoners or not.
I did not.
But it just kind of leads me that when Jake Gyllenhaal's on, he's on. He's good.
Yeah.
And so another movie kind of under the radar of his that's pretty solid, really worth checking out is Brothers.
Yeah.
With Tobey Maguire.
Not a great film, but not a bad film. Yeah. And he gives a great performance. So,
some strong acting, some drama.
When he's ready to go, he brings his A game.
Yeah. And with that being said, also, I think Prisoners would be a fun watch with this as well. Solely for his character.
As I'll say again, I would watch an entire TV series that's just Jake Gyllenhaal's Detective Loki.
Yeah.
Prisoners is an okay movie. He is he just blows me away in that movie.
You have no idea how bad it gets. I wish I knew how to quit you.
Dustin Sells, what do you think?
I'm going to say shelf as well. What it does with found footage.
It's been a while, weeks in a row.
Well, found footage that's not a horror movie.
Yeah.
That's a big deal.
I agree.
There are other movies that do it. Chronicles, a superhero film. Cloverfield, some sort of disaster, apocalyptic alien invasion thing.
That's still a horror film.
Yeah.
But, there are places where the genre kind of edges away from horror. But this is a real clear break from horror with found footage. And I think that of itself just makes it worthwhile. Where we can maybe see where this particular,
at least a valuable part of the conversation.
This particular style, I don't even know what you call found footage now. People are saying genre words around it. I want to say style.
I'd say it's style. I'd say like animation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like CG heavy films like noir. I think it's almost more a style than a genre. You can have a noir comedy.
And I'm feeling that the style is beginning to flex its muscles some. And getting out of that Paranormal Activity rut. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited to see other possibilities with it. There is a film coming out. It's going to be a complete comedy. It's a bridesmaid party in Las Vegas. And it's totally found footage. And it's...
That could be fun.
It's a total over-the-top
Was comedy. It 21 and Over? Or...
No, I'm pretty sure that's going to
Party X or something?
Yeah, that's Project X.
Project
yeah.
One found footage.
Which looked terrible, but it was interesting that they... I think you're right. I think that was found footage.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah, there are other possibilities, and I'm excited about that. That's why it is shelf worthy. What I would say, what you should else watch, obviously The Departed, as I've mentioned already, because, man, that movie, it is so very, very, very good. And then I would probably just go ahead and suggest that, let's go ahead and jump into found footage and look at the one that started them all. Take a look at The Blair Witch Project and see where we've come. I mean, obviously, the place where we actually began is Cannibal Holocaust. I'm not recommending that one.
I'm pretty sure Cannibal Holocaust is considered the first film.
Oh, it is. It is, but I'm not recommending it.
We're going Blair Witch.
I'm going Blair Witch.
The modern.
The mainstreaming of it.
Yeah.
And where it really begins to happen. Because, again, Cannibal Holocaust, that's the actual beginning. I get that. I'm saying that for the trolls.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. Well, and then the other trolls who are going to remind us of that, like, 98 movie, I think, that was found footage that I literally can't even think of the name of. Nobody cares about it.
Yeah.
Because there's another one. You know why nobody remembers? Because like 8 people saw it.
Yeah, doesn't count.
Including the makers of Blair Witch Project, probably.
Mainstreaming, Blair Witch. Check that out because it's lots of fun.
That's a good movie, actually.
I like it. I'm a fan of that. I do too. Well, let's do what we do, and let's talk about how we can keep this conversation going via social media.
Because we addressed some things.
We did.
But there's certainly a feminist reading of this film that would be very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
There's definitely some issues of poverty and race in this film going on. I could probably talk for 3 hours about this movie.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. And what questions would you ask us, dear listener? Yeah. Where would you want this conversation to go on towards? And let's start with one of those media that Mr. Arthur Gordon kind of curates. What's that?
Well, you can catch us at facebook.com/goodtrashgenrecast. And we got a couple of comments about last week's movie, Bond.
Skyfall. Well, let's hear what they had to say.
The first is just kind of on Bond in general as a character. Randall Bay says, Bond has sex appeal and awesome gadgets. I'm in love. Shane Arrington says, I love the latest movies. Quantum was not, you know, very good, but the other two were pretty awesome. And then on a suggestion of who should play Bond, Brigham Cole chimes in with Tom Hiddleston.
Oh, God.
Who can do dramatic, and damn it, does he have charisma.
Why did none of us think of that?
I did think of him, but I don't...
He's too skinny, I think.
I don't buy it.
I think he could bulk up.
He's going to be more of the Timothy Dalton Bond, and people are going to be like, yeah.
He's such a good actor.
He's a phenomenal actor.
Yeah, I think he's... I didn't even bother with Cumberbatch because I like him, but he's too weird looking. I think Hiddleston is pretty enough that he put on about 20 pounds of muscle. I think he could totally pull it
off. I'm not sure what his body type is. He definitely would pull off the Bond in the tux, but I'm not quite sure he would pull off the Bond in the field gear.
Yeah, drop kicking people.
Right, yeah.
All right, okay.
Soccer kicking
the
AK-47.
It'd be an interesting experiment.
Without breaking stride. That Bond.
Yeah, that awesome Bond. I still think it's a great pick that I wish I thought of. So, I don't know.
That's what we got.
Hey, there's another medium. Where is it?
Oh, okay. Okay, all right. No, I know what you're talking about. I'm putting cases on all you social networks. Yeah, huh? You think you can do this shit? You think you can, Dustin? You think you can do this to me? Huh? You will be sending likes on my sister's stupid status updates when I get finished with you. Shoe program. 23 hours lockdown. Network. All the time. You won't be able to get a Wi-Fi signal. I'm the man in this piece. You understand? You will never see the light of... Who do you think you're messing with? I am the social network. I run this shit. You just live here. Yeah, that's right. Go on. Walk away. Go away. Walk. Because I'm going to burn this mother down. King Kong ain't got shit on Twitter.
Hey, look out! It's Kong! Kong's coming!
Ladies
That's
and gentlemen,
for Training Day, dear listener, not End of Watch.
That was really hard to edit that as I was reading, in case you're wondering. Lots of words I'm not comfortable using. Lots of them. Ladies and gentlemen, you can find us on Twitter at good_trash.
Have we any feedback?
You know what? We got a little.
The tweetsters.
We got a little. Caleb Vesely chimed in and said, just because of the kind of conversation we were having last week, he mentioned a possible drinking game for the Good Trash Undercast. Not related to me correcting Caleb mercilessly. But Mr. Vesely, that's at K_Lub_Vesely on Twitter, said, possible drinking game, anytime something bad happens to the Starks on Game of Thrones, # hangovers are coming.
Right?
Right? We also had Brigham shared with us Bastille. A band and their song Laura Palmer, a band he's taking a liking to.
Oh, you sure that would be as well, yeah.
Plus Twin Peaks reference. And that's about all we had. Some love from some people favoring some of the tweets, you know, of the show last week. But other than that, nothing really. So I'm feeling what Arthur feels when people like stuff and then don't say anything. It hurts.
Hey, we know you're so out there, close, and we realize many of you are just enjoying what we've got to say.
I got
say.
Respect for lurkers, because I'm one myself.
Absolutely, but we do want to have a conversation with you.
We know you're watching. We know you're listening.
We're going to talk about these movies anyway. The reason why we're doing this is so that we can engage with you and talk about
that.
Yeah,
I'm still going to do this.
Yeah, absolutely. Because we were totally going to do this with or without
the podcast. I ain't going nowhere.
So, well, let's play a little game, shall we, gentlemen?
I'm ready.
All right. Well, you know, one thing that happens in this particular film is there is an action sequence in which the two street cops are ambushed in an apartment complex courtyard. Mm-hmm. And it is one of the most harrowing, rapidly edited action sequences I've seen in a long time.
It's good.
And they're using a lot of the gimmicks of the chest cams. They're using a gimmick of a cam on the shotgun, a la Doom. And I gotta say, the CG blood splatter effects also are very reminiscent of Doom in this particular section, especially when one particular baddie is shot in a hallway. Mm-hmm. If you recall what I'm talking about.
I do.
And so we're just going to talk about very stylized.
Well, you're talking about the first person shooting.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very, very stylized, excellent sequences in genre movies. Maybe we don't like the movie, maybe we do like the movie, but we find this sequence to be just top notch.
Now, for those of you thinking to yourself, whoa, hold on. Didn't they do stylized action back in episode whatever, Equilibrium? Yes, we're talking about something different here. I'm talking about specific visual tricks. Mm-hmm. Something, a camera trick, a sleight of hand of some sort, mm-hmm. that really elevates a sequence in a film.
Yes.
Which is important. I think it's an important distinction to make. You know?
I think that's fair to say. Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you, Dalton. Mr. Arthur Gordon, do you mind kicking us off?
Yeah, not a problem. Man, when I was thinking about this, I just kept going back to Hitchcock.
Because Hitchcock.
Everything. Everything's a visual trick for Hitchcock. Obviously, first I went to Vertigo and Psycho with some stairs. There were some tricks with the stairs and the zoom and some stuff. But I went to Young and Innocent, one of his earlier American films, I believe, which features this beautiful tracking shot where we open up in this huge grand ballroom. And the camera starts up on a crane, up on kind of on the second story of this ballroom looking around.
Mm-hmm.
And you see all the people and there's a band on stage playing. And essentially what's happening is they're in this room looking for a murderer. And what happens is the camera begins to track down, closing in slowly, slowly, slowly onto the band. And it zooms in all the way onto the drummer's face. And you see his eyes shifting back and forth, revealing to us that he is the murderer.
Mm-hmm.
Sitting there, nervously ticking away, playing the drums, trying to hide in plain sight. And it's just a really well-done shot that kind of brings us in. And there's a reverse of that kind of in Halloween, where we start small and then we kind of go out
mm-hmm.
big. And that leads me to my next pick, which is Halloween, which is the opening sequence from the first-person point of view.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Young POV Michael Myers doing what he does and killing his sister and so on.
Mm-hmm. And John Carpenter invented the POV slasher in that moment.
The next one, going back to Hitch, is Rope. Which
we came up on the show when we talked about single locations. Films.
Yeah. And the unique thing about this is it's tried to be done in one take.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it's, I think, 7 or 8 takes there, some trick cutting. But what's interesting is he's using a Technicolor camera.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they had to do, which is really impressive about this, is all the sets are on tracking wheels and pulleys and everything, so that when the camera's being moved around the room, it's so well rehearsed and staged that things are being moved on the go.
Walls are going away.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I think it's just a really impressive thing to do. The other one, the last one, another tracking shot is in Soy Cuba, a little foreign
film. Oh, my goodness, yes, with the pool. Yes.
And we get this beautiful tracking shot for over.
It's Soy Cuba, just a quick reference, because it is pretty obscure.
Yeah.
It's a deep cut.
Mm-hmm.
It is a 60?
60s. Russian filmmaker, made in Cuba, Kalatazov, right?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. This is before Steadicam, I believe, kind of.
I don't know anything about this movie except for this opening sequence, but it is, holy crap.
Yeah, this brilliant over the landscape of Cuba, just going in all across the countryside, and then we go into the city, into probably a hotel or apartment complex, mm-hmm. and there's a party going on, and everybody
we drop go to the balconies.
Pool. We go up and down buildings, we go in and out of water, and it's all one beautiful long take, and it's really well done. So those are my picks.
Excellent. I like those choices. Mr. Dalton Stewart, sir.
I got a lot of things I don't want to say a whole lot about. First of all, we've mentioned it weirdly several weeks in a row. It feels like Doom. Dustin mentioned a couple times on the show. It feels like it keeps coming up. Doom is not a good movie. I don't want you to make any mistake.
Nor was it a great video game, really.
Yeah, I mean, it's influential for sure.
It was fun.
Yeah, it's influential. I don't know. Anyway, Doom is a terrible film. Based on the titular video game franchise starring Dwayne, The Rock Johnson, and Carl Urban's chin.
And the rest of it.
And the rest of his face in this one. And it features an awesome sequence of Carl Urban killing monsters in first person. And it is an otherwise not great film, although it does feature Dwayne Johnson saying the line, Semper Fi, mother, and it's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
It's a terrible movie, but actually I kind of want to watch it right now, like right this second. But yeah, that sequence, you can't help but think of watching it
right.
when you watch this film, I think. You know, Arthur's talking about long takes. I instantly was reminded and thought a little bit about it in this film, just in terms of camera trickery. Alfonso Cuarón, late of Gravity, you know, his most recent outing. Mm-hmm. But really, you know, the film that put him on the map for American audiences, Children of Men.
Yes.
And the fantastic long sequences in that film, particularly the battle scene at the end of the film. You can't think of action scenes and visual trickery without thinking about John Woo. I mean, mm-hmm. come on. Hard Boiled. Guys, if you haven't seen Hard Boiled, you need to check it out because you're going to be like, oh, this is what the Wachowskis were watching when they got baked in college.
Yeah.
This is what they were like, oh, we should do this, but with philosophy. Hard-boiled is a great movie. Hard-boiled is a great movie. Because I don't want to talk about The Matrix. It's been coming up a lot on the show. I want to talk about Hard-boiled and the king of bullet time, I would say the originator of bullet time to my mind. Well, actually, no, that's not true. We'll talk about that in a second. But John Woo, specifically his film Hard Boiled. Actually, if you want to talk about the origins of bullet time, you could probably go to the spaghetti westerns of Sergio Leone and Sam Peckinpah.
Mm-hmm.
Really, some of the, you know, you get your slow motion blood splatter, and I think that you could probably say might be the origins of bullet time. You know, at least the foundation that we know of what we know today. So there's some great films, you know, The Dollars Trilogy, Fistful of Dollars, A Few Dollars More, and Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. You could also actually check out some of, if you're once more that Clint Eastwood's directorial debuts, or has debuts, his early outings. The Outlaw Josie Wales is one that comes to mind. Pale Rider, these are some films that do with some similar slow motion gunfight stuff. A lot of fun, a lot of visual tricks. Lastly, I thought of a film, because I really wanted to be like, let's not talk about an action movie. Let's think of another visual trick. And I thought about a film from, I want to say, 2007 called Across the Universe. It's a musical using Beatles music. And this film is all over the map in camera tricks, in its color palette, in terms of practical effects versus special effects, versus some animation sequences. This is, again, because it's, you know, replicating the music of the Beatles in, you know, the 60s. A lot of drugs involved, and to illustrate that, they do a lot of really interesting things with the camera in this film. Putting it in weird places, doing weird things with the film. You know, a movie I like more than most people, to be perfectly honest with you. It plays a little long, but I like it a little bit. So you should check that one out, because I think there's some fun camera work in that film, and I think it really helps to elevate that film above its station. Which isn't to say the performances aren't good, but, you know, jukebox musicals are, you know, hard, I think, to get right. And last but not least, I want to mention David Ayer's Street Kings, because it's got a cool gunfight. I was thinking about it. I want to talk about it again.
Sure.
There's some fun tracking shots with Keanu Reeves in a fridge jumping over and shooting at people. And, yeah, not a good movie, guys. I want to be clear right now. Jay Moore plays a corrupt cop in that movie.
Oh.
Keanu Reeves plays the hero cop. It's really miscast. The only one that's not miscast is Chris Evans as the earnest rookie who wants to become a ghetto gunfighter.
Mm.
That's the only person not miscast in this movie. Forrest Whitaker plays the tough-as-nails police captain.
No.
Although Terry Crews is in it as a gigantic badass. So that plays too. Dustin, I wrote off a bunch of things that I really didn't care that much about. You got anything?
Yeah, I got a couple things. One of them is going to tie on to what you were talking about, that use of slow motion in action. Peckinpah's Wild Bunch obviously comes to mind, that early gunfight scene.
Yeah.
It's a semi-Western. Of course, this is a pickup of the same thing Akira Kurosawa does in Seven Samurai, when one of the lead characters goes in to rescue a child being held hostage, and quickly dispatches the villain, and he falls out of the hut in super slow motion. And I mean, even if you are not up for a subtitled 3-hour Japanese samurai movie.
From the 50s.
I don't know who wouldn't be. But some people wouldn't be. You ought to just watch that little sequence, because that use of slow motion photography makes it awesome. And to keep it Western, just for a second, let's talk about a little known movie that's poorly plotted but visually dazzling. That's The Quick and the Dead, with Sharon Stone and Leonardo DiCaprio and Russell Crowe and Gene Hackman.
Directed by a good trash genre cast favorite, Sam Raimi.
Yes, and the movie is super fun. And these zooms of the camera lens alongside a dolly back that creates this strange hyperkinetic sense of distance and closeness.
If you haven't seen it.
It's an Hitchcock.
Well, if you haven't seen it, think about Sam Raimi's Evil Dead films. Then transplant all those camera tricks to a Western that's about a gunfighting tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And now scoop your job off the ground and go rent it. Because
yes.
It's the shit.
It is a lot of fun.
It's
and as
good.
Arthur mentioned, Hitchcock develops this trick in Vertigo. That's where you get this sense of Jimmy Stewart's unease when he looks down the stairs. It's the exact same thing now being applied to a Western. And of course, we must talk about the Hitchcock. And we must talk specifically about Psycho and the shower scene.
Oh, for
this
sure.
is 70 angles under 60 seconds. And nobody wants to get into a hotel shower ever again.
I don't.
It is amazing what happens in the film, how he's able to cut around the sensors. And they did exist at that time. Mm-hmm. And how he's able to give that utter sense of horror, terror. You're fighting for your life with... Janet Leigh And it is wonderful. Mm-hmm. And it's really just one of those great moments where the visual trick makes what is pretty much a pretty rote, you get stabbed about six times in a shower. But it makes it that visceral moment where you are present in the scene without any use of point of view.
Yeah.
Which I find to be kind of interesting.
Yeah, for sure.
So those are my visual trick picks.
You know something that just sprang to mind for me?
What's that?
A director that's much maligned, but we talked a lot about slow motion tonight. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I have to mention him. And Zack Snyder, because he uses it to such extreme lengths. You know, he's a popular director right now. Just, you know, he's hot off Man of Steel. And I want to talk about something he did in Man of Steel that I really like. Obviously, you think about the genesis of bullet time, you can't help but think about 300, which is nothing but lots of bullet time to give you the money shot of bad guys dying. Really, awesomely, I will say, I like the used sparingly, I think, super fast mixed with super slow can make a really cool action scene. But I want to talk about something he did in Man of Steel that just blew my socks off, and then I saw it also in Neil Blomkamp's Elysium in August this year. Something I'd never seen before these two films. I don't know if anybody else has seen this, but I want to run this by you guys. Both of these directors do something in these films where there's a fight scene. And instead of doing what most directors have been doing lately in fight scenes, where we've got our characters and they're tussling and the camera kind of pans around them, instead, the camera and the fighters are locked in place and they pan together, if that makes sense.
I'm picking up what you're laying down.
Yeah, instead of the camera moving around our fight and the fight stays stationary, the camera moves in a circle, but the fight moves with it.
Right.
And it's very, very interesting. It's something I've never seen anywhere else except for these two films. Now, if anybody else knows what I'm talking about, first of all, or second of all, can think of other films where you've seen this, I'd love to hear from you.
Check out a clip.
Because these are really cool visual tricks that I just kind of thought of while we were wrapping up.
We like YouTube links. We'd love those if you can find them, dear listener.
Yeah, if you can, please do, because they're really cool to look at.
Stuff right there, I think.
We done.
Yeah, well, let's do what we always do, gents. Let's talk about what's got us fired up this week in pop culture. Mr. Dalton Stewart, if you would, sir.
Start with me all night. Well, okay. If you insist. Sorry. All right. Don't give me that look, Arthur. I just feel like he started with me more than he usually does.
Well, there's three of us, not four of us.
All right, shut up. Moving on. I am fired up this week.
Yeah?
I'm sassy right now. I'm sorry. Sorry, I work with girls all day. It brings it out of
And
me.
He is the sassiest woman in that office.
Yeah, I was called the sassiest girl in the office today. I'm really proud of that title. I'm straight and I make no case for it. Moving on. Started playing a little game this week called Beyond Two Souls from the game studio Quantic Dreams, I believe is the name of the company. If you aren't familiar with them, they did a game a couple years back that was fairly popular called Heavy Rain. And what this company does is they make video games that really apply to this show, because they're basically movies. Basically 10-hour films that you have input into.
Mm-hmm.
So, character gets in a fight, you control the fight, but not in the traditional gameplay sense of the word. It's what in the gaming industry, if you're not a gamer, we'll call quick time events, where you button prompt or a stick prompt comes up on screen, you have to do that very quickly. And that's basically what the gameplay of these games boils down to. There is some walking around. These are games that are very immersive, and they try to give you a sense of a character's day-to-day life, and also very thrilling, and blah, 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 blah. But also, it's a 10-hour film, which I think is just fun in of itself. But this one's really interesting, because it features the leads of Ellen Page and Willem Dafoe.
Oh, nice.
They did mocap, they did voiceover. So I've been playing that, it's pretty fun. It got mixed reviews when it first came out, so I didn't jump at it, but I've been playing it. And there are some problems with the way they've chosen to tell, I think, their story, in terms of they told it non-linearly, which isn't necessarily a problem, but the way they chose to do it, I think, is a problem. The game is a lot of fun, and I've been really enjoying it. Also this week, I've been listening to the Marshall Mathers LP, too.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. As a hip-hop fan, I don't talk a lot about my love of Eminem because I feel like it, you know, you don't be the white guy that likes Eminem a whole lot when you're talking about hip-hop. But I do. I'm sorry. I think the guy's a genius. I can't help it. It's a good album.
I like Eminem.
See? Everybody likes Eminem because he represents something, I think, in our culture. He represents something deep and weird in our psyche, but also represents a need to express yourself and go for it. I love him. The album's great. I've only listened to it twice through so far, but further updates to come on that. And finally, there was an announcement this week that I'm really excited about. Telltale Games, one more game thing for you. I've been game light lately. Telltale Games, the creators of the Adventures series based on the Walking Dead comic book and TV show, and The Wolf Among Us based on the comic book Fables, both of which are awesome. I don't know if I've mentioned that on the show before, have announced that they are going to produce an adventure game based on Game of Thrones.
Nice.
Yee!
I got really excited about that. That's really fun.
Check these games out if you're a gamer and you haven't played these. Shame on you. That's The Walking Dead and The Wolf Among Us, both by Telltale Games. They're very interesting adventure games where you get to have dialogue with people and what you say to people has consequences that run the course of a 5-part game that comes out in, you know, like monthly installments. So check those out.
Nice. Well, thank you, Mr. Dalton Stewart. That's a lot of stuff to be fired up about. Mr. Arthur Gordon.
Well, you know, I didn't have much last
week. Yeah, I got a couple things. I'm one step closer. I finally picked up The World's End. Came out on Blu-ray last week.
Yeah.
Or a couple weeks ago. I picked it up and hope to watch it soon. I'm really excited about that.
Did you not get to see it in theaters?
I did not. I missed
it. Oh, buddy.
Yeah.
Let me know when you do.
Yeah, I will be talking about it, sure. I did get an email.
Cool.
I'm going to get to go see American Hustle in a couple of weeks.
Oh, nice. So cool.
And so I'm that's the movie I'm looking forward to this year. I have really enjoyed David O. Russell the last couple of years, and so
I like that he took the casts of his last two movies and just smashed them all together.
Yeah.
I think it's awesome.
He just wants to win all those SAG awards for ensemble.
He does.
Movies.
He loves it. Mm-hmm. He loves it. He eats it up.
But lastly, I started watching Parks and Rec. This is a movie.
Took you long enough.
Well, I tried watched the first couple episodes, but it felt way too much like The Office for me at first.
It finds its
Then I went back and I picked it, and I think first season only six episodes. But by season two, it really
finds its own voice for sure.
And I was just introduced to Adam Scott, and I have to say that the resemblance is there.
Yeah,
it is there. I definitely saw it when he walked into the shot. So that's my week in pop culture.
Excellent.
I'll take less masculine Carl Urban all day. Adam Scott's a pretty guy and an actor I like a lot.
I don't have a ton to say this week in pop culture. I am getting more and more excited about The Wolf of Wall Street to come out. And I'm just very, very, very thrilled that this is happening because Marty Scorsese is my guy. And I understand that he is making an adaptation of a 19th century novel next. It's a 19th century novel set in Japan about Jesuit missionaries just for the expulsion of missionaries from Japan. That's his next project.
Did they already do that movie with Christian Bale? And it like almost barely came out? Oh, no, that was in China. My bad.
I know what you're talking about.
That was in China in World War II. My bad. Continue. Sorry.
Nonetheless, it's coming out next. And those sorts of Scorsese and that stuff is kind of my wheelhouse because I got Japanese and Jesuits and Scorsese. I mean, it really doesn't get much better for me. I am all up in that and very, very fired about that. I also caught something streaming recently on the Flicks of Nets, and I want to go ahead and recommend it now because there may be a spinoff program that we'll be talking more about in the months to come, but this may or may not be available then. It's an art movie. It's not what we would do in this show. It's far too good for us, but it's called Taboo, which is named after an F.W. Murnau, his last project before he died tragically in a car accident. And it is a Portuguese film.
Mm-hmm.
It is set in the current day and age. There is this drama of an old woman who is losing her mind and slowly dying, and her neighbor, who is conscientious and cares for, also her housemaid, who is Nigerian, and their life. And then the things that happen before her happen next, right? And there's a crocodile, and there's a love affair, and a murder. And
of course there is.
And it is
told, be a crocodile.
It is black and white, and it is in gorgeous 35mm in the present day period, and in the period in the 50s and 60s is shot 16mm, and there's a crocodile, and it's...
You had me at Portuguese.
It is beautiful. It is surreal, it is spiritual, it is romantic, it is beautiful. You gotta see Taboo.
Okay.
I mean, I really, really like this.
Can you do me a favor, Dustin?
Yeah.
Can you say Portuguese again?
Portuguese.
But say it as a pretentious white guy who's trying to sound more cultured.
Oh, Puerto Guess. That's what I would
it's
say.
It's so much fun.
that's what they would say.
If you want more spice in your life, say words the way they're, you know, natively pronounced. Because it makes you feel like a douche, but it makes
Javier
you feel
like... Javier Bardem.
Shut up, God. All right, names don't count. You pronounce people's names the ways they're pronounced. That being said, you can be a white person and say Nicaragua without saying Nicaragua.
Nicaragua.
Ecuador. It's fun to say, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, hey, Spanish. Hey, Spanish.
Cuba.
Spanish?
Cuba.
Thanks for having fun pronunciations.
Yeah.
Cuba.
Soy Cuba.
Soy Cuba.
Yeah.
Soy Cuba.
Yeah. The movie is in Portuguese. The subtitles are fine. And it is really, really beautiful. And one of the best movies I've seen in a long time. Sight and Sound actually rated it as the number two movie of the year last year.
Wow.
And so they thought very well of it. Check it out. It's streaming currently on the Flicks of Nets. And you should see that. You know what else you should see? Probably what we're watching next for this show.
You should do that.
We're going to do a little thing in December. We're going to theme month out. We sort of themed out these agent action movies over the month of November.
Agent unintentionally. It was an unintentional thing.
It really wasn't. Yeah, it just kind of happened. Well, there's a lot of movies from 2012 that we either wanted to revisit or wanted to watch for the first time.
Yeah.
And they all just kind of happened to fit a theme.
Yeah.
And then Ghostbusters also happened to fit that theme weirdly.
Strangely.
It worked.
But we're going to do something else. December, we're going to do a docu-December. We're going to look at documentary film over it. Because, you know, the medium's bigger than just narrative. It's bigger than just telling stories.
Yeah.
And so we want to talk about that. We're going to talk about how the medium does documentary, specifically with documentaries about how stories are told, which specifically, even more so, would be documentary movies about movies. So it'd be like movies.
I think so.
Movies
about
movies.
Movies.
About movies.
About movies.
Sometimes.
About movies.
About movies.
And the men who made those movies.
But sometimes it'll just be about the nature of storytelling and how it infiltrates our culture. So, you want to give the full roster right now, just so people know what they're in for?
I think that might be fair. Dalton and I kind of worked one out. Arthur's looking at me like a deer in the headlights. We're going to do them about movies. So, next week, we're going to look at a movie called Room 237. It's about The Shining. We're going to talk about criticism. We're going to talk about what we do on this show, what's okay, what's not okay, where the boundaries are.
What analysis really is.
And the liturgy of how we put together the show is probably going to be a little out the window because it's an analysis movie. So how do you do that? It's going to be fun. You want to tune in.
It'll be
in.
Interesting.
You ought to catch it on Netflix. It is there. We're also going to talk about a little terrible movie.
We're going to do a documentary about the trashiest of all trash movies. That's Troll 2, and it's companion documentary, Best Worst Movie, directed by the child who stars in the film.
Excellent. It's going to be lots of fun.
It's going to be a lot. It's going to be a blast.
I have VHS memories of Troll 2. It's going to be good times.
Because he's old.
And nostalgia. And so we're very excited about that. We're going to take a brief little break away from the movie thing.
And do a movie about stories.
Well, it's about telling stories. And it's also a movie that feels like a horror movie.
And that's Cropsey.
That's Cropsey. And so it's...
The most horrific documentary you've probably seen ever. Most of you have seen... It's pretty popular. That's one of the reasons we want to do it. It's a blind spot for me, and I'm really looking forward to it.
And yeah, I've seen it already a time or two, and I'm very excited to talk about it again, and to talk about how we tell stories, urban legends, all that stuff's going to come into one place, and it's going to be great. Finally, another movie about all the movies. That's right. We're going to look at Nightmares in Red, White, and Blue. We're going to talk about America. We're going to talk about the horror movie genre. And it's going to be scads of fun. If you have not caught this documentary, you need to do
it. It's a blast.
And this is one of those things where you have seen this movie, and in some way you've seen all the movies. And you can talk intelligently about them without ever actually having seen them. And that's
helpful.
If
you want to be the smartest of your group of horror buff friends, you'll need to watch this movie.
That's really what
you'll know
for.
A lot about the history of horror films. You'll know a lot about why. A lot about? Is that what I said?
I think it might have
which
been.
Which is like a bada-bod. Which is it? Where is that, Dustin? Pakistan.
Pakistan.
Pakistan. I actually like saying Pakistan. My point is, if you watch Nightmares Red, White, and Blue, you will know why horror films scare us. You'll know a lot about that. And it's really a blast. I love that movie.
It's going to be good, and we're going to have a good time. Docu-December. So stay tuned in with us. Check out Room 237. You might want to revisit The Shining if you get some time.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the holidays are coming. It's Thanksgiving. You know what the family would like to sit down and do? See Jack Nicholson make out with a corpse. I think Grandma would love that. Watch that with the family this weekend, and never get invited back again.
Fair enough.
That's pretty much what's going to happen, right?
Dustin. light of my life. Can we end the show, please?
That's a show, dear listener. We're so glad you tuned in with us. Keep the feedback going via social media. Where are you at, Dalton?
I can be located on Twitter at @Dahl_Stu.
Where are you at, Arthur?
You can find me at @RNDTBLReview.
And all of these, of course, are on Twitter. I am at @Dustin_SELLS, and I would love to keep the conversation going.
I forgot to tell you where that was. My bad.
It's all right. We got this. We'll see you next time. Check out those movies, and we're looking forward to a fun docu-December.
I'm going to go home and sleep with my wife.
Hey, ladies. Hey, mama. What's up? Let's smile.
All right.
All right. I know we're going to get it on the night. We smoke.
I smoke.
I drink.
Me too.
Well, good. We're going to get high tonight. Got drops.
Got
trunks.
Got juice.
All right. And we're going to take a ride tonight. So, mama.
What's up?
Let's slide.
All right.
All right. We
yo, now it's downtown clubbing, ladies' night. Seen shorty, she was crazy, right? And I approached baby light. Ma, what's your age and type? She looked at me and said, you's a baby, right? I told her, I'm 18 and live a crazy life. Plus, I tell you what the 80s like. And I know what the ladies like. Need a man that's polite, listens and takes advice. I could be all three. Plus, I can lay the pipe. Come with me, come stay tonight. She looked at me laughing, like, boy, your game is tight. I'm laughing back, like, sure, you're right. Get in the car, and don't touch nothing. Sit in the car, let's discuss something. Either we loving or I see you tomorrow. Now we speeding up the west side. Hand creeping up the left side. I'm ready to do it, ready to bone. Ready for dome, 55th exit. Damn, already we home. Now let's get it on.
Hey, mom,
what's up?
Let's slide.
All right.
All right. We smoke.
I smoke.
I drink.
Me too.
Well, good. Cause we gon' get hot tonight. Got drops.
Got coops.
Got trucks.
Got jeans.
All right. And we gon' take a ride tonight. So much.
Yo.
Let's slide.
All right.
All right. We gon' get
now that I got a girl. X wanna holler and spit. Told me to acknowledge her quick. She like, Cam, stop fronting on that Dave Hostage tip. Come over, let's smile and sip. I'm like, mama is sick. I promise you thick. Usually I have a problem with chicks.
Why?
They all say I'm rotten and rich, but not her boobies real. High heel do be feel. Plus got them Gucci nails, huh? You a cutie still. And it's my damn girl too. Ain't no groupie deal. We left the movies with Uzi, Suzuki wheels to the jacuzzi. I tell you, my boobies real. I mean, she do be winning, Louis spinning. Go to the crib, she got the Gucci linen. I see booby grinning. She looked and said, Cam, I know that you be sinning. Nah, I'm a changed man. Look at the range, man. I got a whole new game plan. Looked and said, that's nothing but game, Cam. She was right, she was up in the range, man. Dropped her off at the L, now I'm flipping the cell. That's right, I had to call up L. Yo, L,
what up?
I hit.
What else?
Plus, don't
say word.
And we got it on tonight.
Hey, Ma.
What's up?
Let's slide.
All right.
All right. And we gon' get it on tonight. You smoke.
I smoke.
I drink.
Me too.
Well, good. Cause we gon' get high tonight. Got drops.
Got coops.
Got trucks.
Got juice.
All right. And we gon' take a ride tonight. So much.
What's up?
Let's slide.
All right.